Today we're going to look at some of the highlights and the lowlights in the law for this past year, which we leave behind us with considerable weariness, and hope that 2022 will be a better year for progressives. But it's not entirely it's an uneven picture what we see looking back in 2021. And I think as we've taken up so often on the old mole on the left of the law, that there have been victories as well as stinging defeats. So let's look at the three branches of that govern our lives, the executive, legislative, and judicial branch. And maybe you could start with a brief civics lesson this morning and how these three branches of government produce laws. And then we can look at each, and you can kind of lay out some of the notable decisions of 2021.
Well, I'll be real brief, and it's a case of the legislature making the laws, the executive branch carrying out the laws or executing the laws, and the court interpreting what the laws mean. And particularly in this country, we have the backdrop of a constitution, which allows the court to reach really far and really deep in terms of what they see, they believe the law to properly mean.
And these branches extend into state and local governing.
Absolutely, yeah. At every level, these three branches interact in the way I just described.
So where do you want to start?
Well, let's start with the U.S. Supreme Court, because they have been a disaster. It's been a complete collapse of any hope that the court will ever do anything right. And instead, what we have is a gross expansion of the concept of religious liberty to intrude on rights to of women to regulate their own bodies, of people to join unions, anyone to obtain health care. All these are drastically affected by the U.S. Supreme Court's rulings, interpretations of laws, and expansions of the concept of religious liberty. The year began with the bloodbath. William Barr decided to execute anyone he possibly could within the federal system. And that meant that 13 people were executed, four of them in January after Trump had already lost. The U.S. Supreme Court did nothing to stop any of this, even though several of these people had come up with viable claims that may well have prevailed had they been allowed to present evidence.
Just to explain that point, how many people are on death row in federal prisons, and how often have they been executed historically?
Well, no one's been executed in federal prisons for 20 years for various reasons, including quasi-moratoriums by Obama, and there's been a complete cessation of executions until William Barr decided to fire the system up. And the U.S. Supreme Court has done nothing in the face of laws that would, for example, completely flout the concept of abortion. They've allowed lower courts to proceed. They've even actively intervened in order to overturn courts of appeal that have suspended laws. So they are really on the warpath now. There's no question after the Roe v. Wade oral argument that the right to abortion does not exist.
And it's not a religious liberty for women.
No, not at all. It's not a right of privacy. There is no law that trumps the religious liberty clause. Now, we have a hierarchy of rights. A good example is with same-sex marriages, which have been protected now by the U.S. Supreme Court. But that's an inferior right. And if the Catholic Church, which was awarded a contract by the city of Philadelphia to judge whether or not potential foster parents could be good parents, wants to discriminate, then they have the right to do that. Their right trumps the right of people who might want to adopt children. We have now a hierarchy of rights, with religious rights, gun rights, property rights, rising way above any rights having to do with public welfare or health. And I dread what they will do with the vaccination case. They're arguing this very day, January 7th, and we'll get a ruling relatively soon about whether it's okay for the executive branch to require everyone to be vaccinated, or whether someone's religious rights will trump the executive branch's right to manage society.
Let's move to the upside of the picture with what we've just taken up in the left and the law this past year, the movement for progressive district attorneys that came out of the Black Lives Matter movement. Can you say a bit about the upside of the picture and this part of the executive branch?
Well, it's continued to be very successful. The decline of the courts has been matched by a rise in power of progressive prosecutors all over the country. That tendency started a couple of years ago, but it's continued this year with efforts to beat back Larry Krasner, who was the first truly progressive prosecutor. I mean, progressive in the deepest sense, not just nervously bowing every now and then in this direction or that, but really aggressively firing bad prosecutors, implementing a host of discretionary calls, like whether who to prosecute, that are very favorable. And the police union in Philadelphia was outraged. They mounted a big campaign against him. They had their favorite candidate, and Krasner triumphed solidly. Efforts to recall Chesa Boudin in San Francisco and George Gascon in Los Angeles have failed. Here in Portland, Mike Schmidt is not as solidly progressive as these, but he's much better than his predecessor and is spending money now, even though in the teeth of the rise in homicides, has been spending money on a variety of ways of affecting the community and affecting guns, which makes so many disputes into fatal encounters. So yeah, the executive branch of government has been acting much better, and it's a signal for us to build on that, to support that, because the executive branch finally has more power than the courts. You know, the prosecutors every day decide whether or not to charge someone with a crime, and if so, with what crime. And their decisions are on a day-to-day basis, the texture of the laws. The courts, with the exception of aggressive attacks made by courts around the country or by attorneys challenging fossil fuel companies for being liars, the courts have been a place to be defensive only. But the fact that Exxon and other fossil fuel companies were caught 4 years ago with the fact that they had known that climate change was very real since at least the 1990s, and that they've made capital allocation decisions on the basis of that, like determining where they will build what kind of terminals to load and unload oil. At the same time, they were saying publicly that climate change is a big mystery. On the one hand, this, on the other hand, that. We don't know. They knew, and they were acting as if they knew. So people are now suing them for deception of the public and are getting somewhere. No one's prevailed yet, but all the efforts of Exxon to have those cases dismissed have been failing all over the country.
I think we also, those of us who are non-Indigenous, owe a tremendous debt to the tribes around the country, particularly in the Northwest, that have fought fossil fuel interests through the courts, through pressing the treaty rights that are built into the U.S. Constitution, that Native tribes in the 19th century and in subsequent cases have fought to defend the right to access to water and resources through what's called usual and accustomed uses of lands. And that these fights that were, of course, were on the public national or global stage with Standing Rock involved fighting the federal government that protected mining interests, that protected the fossil fuel interests, saying that often pipelines and rail lines went through treaty lands, ceded lands that were still protected in terms of access to clean water and resources. So,
well, all over the country, you're right, Jan. tribes throughout this country have been energetic, smart, and sustained in their litigation. They're holding people to these treaties. Treaties have always been regarded by the U.S. as temporary temporizers. Well, this will give me what I want right now. But if it turns out later that we've accidentally extended something important to the tribes, then we'll violate the treaties and nobody will be the wiser. But now the tribes have been using the treaties in a very effective way to protect all of us, basically.
Yeah, so we'll continue to follow many of these cases, particularly as the Biden administration pushes clean energy that opens up a new frontier of mining interests around so-called clean energy and the mining of lithium, copper, cobalt, and other minerals that are seen as critical to the expansion of electric cars. Anything further you would want to say about the judicial branch?
Oh, yeah, I do, Jan. We can't go without hosannas and praises of all sorts to the Oregon Supreme Court, because in a quiet way, and perhaps it would not have happened if it wasn't in a quiet way, more than 30 people on Oregon were effectively removed from the death row, and death row has been dismantled in Oregon. It was a two-step process, really. There was a shift in the death penalty legislation in 2020 when the Oregon legislature got rid of all the categories of aggravated murder that would allow a DA to bring a death sentence, because there had been intense criticism saying that basically it's so wide and inclusive that any single murder in the world can be charged as a death penalty. It's totally arbitrary. And who actually gets to face the end of their life in a trial? So they tightened it up. They got rid of everything that had been in place before and created four new, very narrow, very severe categories of the death penalty. So that change meant that litigation ensued. And this year, the court ruled, because of the precedent, that no single person in any part of this country ever or anywhere else in the world has been actually executed when the law that convicted them was no longer on the books. So all these people who had been convicted and sentenced to death under the old law had their death sentences removed.
Now, you were involved in pressing some of those appeals.
Yes, I was. But the main people who did the work were Jeff Ellis and Renee Manis of the Federal Public Defender's Office, Rich Wolf. Yeah, there were lots of people who coordinated this effort and have been fighting really effectively for many years against Oregon's death penalty.
This is part of the broader Black Lives Matter movement. Many activists involved in police politics describe themselves as abolitionists, and abolitionism has taken some heavy hits this year. But you're saying there, the larger picture also includes advances as people become more conscious of the racism that's baked into the judicial criminal justice system.
Well, yeah, there has been, as you know, a ferocious backlash, as there always is whenever Black people advance in any way in this country. But there have been legislative victories, laws, for example, tightening up the right of prosecutors to dismiss African-Americans from juries. That's been a routine use by the executive branch of their power to select juries, is to get rid of any minority people. It's quite clear that, according to surveys, African-Americans are 20% less likely to support a death sentence. So DAs, even if they're not personally, you know, rabid racists, will still want to get rid of any African-American in order to obtain a conviction. And it's gotten somewhat more difficult due to laws passed in three states that I know of. But basically, yeah, it's been an up and down year, an effort to consolidate the gains made in 2020 after the murder of George Floyd. But this year, the actual banning of books related to something called critical race theory, which has been expanded now to include anything that suggests that America was ever racist, has been a strong counterpunch from people defending white supremacy. And the results are, you know, going back and forth. It's very much an issue on the cutting edge of both legislative and executive branch of government.
To sum up 2021 and to look forward to the landscape ahead, the legal landscape for progressives for 2022, where do you see the legal ground where we should be fighting, if not reforming the Supreme Court, and the courts are less and less a place to seek justice? Where do you think we need to be fighting?
Well,
where should we put our barricades?
Well, the courts are largely a lost cause. You know, Trump appointed 12 of the 27 judges in the Ninth Circuit now. The federal courts have become something to avoid rather than to use. Executive branch of government is open, wide open. People have been persuaded by all the DNA cases of exoneration that the crime and punishment is government work after all, that there are mistakes made, that it is racist. There have been so many films made. The TikTok and YouTube are just filled with instances of blatant racism. There are possibilities here to get better prosecutors elected, to get better laws passed, and to work on the ground in local communities and from the ground up, work to make a better world.
Okay, well, that's a good way to end the year as old moles, working from the ground up. We'll continue to report in the upcoming year. Hopefully, we'll have more highlights than lowlights.
Thanks much, Jen.
Happy New Year.